Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to DCB Bank Limited Q4 FY 2023 earnings conference call. Joining us on the call today are Mr. Murali M. Natarajan, Managing Director and CEO, Mr. Satish Gundewar, Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. Ajit Kumar Singh, Chief Investor Relations Officer. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Murali Natarajan. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much for joining this call. I am talking to you from our boardroom in the corporate office. We have Satish Gundewar, our Chief Financial Officer. We have Praveen Kutty, our Head of Retail Banking. We have Meenakshi, who's our Relationship Head for FI and Investors. We have Meghna, who's our Branch Operations Manager. We have Venky, who's our Operations, HR and Technology Head. We have Sridhar, who's our Chief Risk Officer. We have Ravi Kumar, who is our CFO in charge and currently handling our operations and special projects. We have Satish, our Head of FI and Treasury. Ajit, who is the Head of our Treasury and FI. Thank you very much for dialing in. We also have our support staff from finance. This is Q4 results and full year 2022-2023. I believe that we have a very robust quarter. Our balance sheet has crossed 50,000 crores. Now it is about 52,000 odd crores. The total business has crossed 75,000 crores. Deposits have crossed 41,000 crore. CASA is about 10,500 crores. We personally feel very happy and proud of achieving these numbers, and we are putting the bank on a trajectory to double the balance sheet in about four years. Our intention is to reach 100,000 crore of balance sheet in about four years' time. The performance on net interest income has been good at 27.7%. What is very important to know about our income is that there are two big income streams which was present last year, which was more or less non-existent this year. For example, PSLC. We made a very decent amount of revenue in the year FY 2021-2022. In 2022-2023, because of market conditions and regulatory changes, there has been a steep fall. Despite that, the overall fall in the other income category has been very limited, primarily because of the good work that is happening in third-party distribution fee on our processing fees and other items which are all the core items. That is really something we are very happy about. Operating profit is pretty much flat to last year. Of course, the year FY 2021-2022 had some one-off items. Nevertheless, the operating profit for fourth quarter has been very good at 11% higher than previous year same quarter. Again, important thing is that as we have made investments in the front line and in one of the chart in the investor presentation, you can clearly see the quarterly disbursements without considering the co-lending, how smartly it has moved up. We are confident that given the frontline capacity and the productivity that we are working on, and also some of the frontline investments we are doing in technology, we should be able to consistently improve this number further. From a cost income ratio point of view, the fourth quarter was 59.9%. Usually, the fourth quarter is, you know, far better than the previous quarters because of the momentum that we have. If you look at the same quarter previous year, again, you have seen that we had delivered 113 crores of profit, which was all-time high. This year we have done 142 crores, which is again all-time high. We believe that the profitability in a steady manner will continue to improve. One of the other things that has gone off very well throughout the year for us is that our upgrades and recoveries have been consistently equal to or higher than our slippages. And that is one of the reasons why we have been able to substantially reduce our provisions for this year, in fact, compared to previous year. The other point to note here is that pre-COVID, our operating profit divided by provision used to be in the range of 4 to 5 times. We are back to that level, which clearly demonstrates the robustness and the strength of the business model. The net NPA is pretty much close to 1%. Our intention is to bring it down further over time. Initially, our target was 1.5, but we have been able to surpass that target. For the fourth quarter, ROA is 1.1% and ROE is almost close to 14%, which has been our intention. Again, usually, as you know, in the first quarter, the cost comes in of salary increases. So I expect some impact of that in the quarter in 2023-24. However, we are confident that if we consistently improve our performance the way it has been seen now, we should be able to deliver the kind of results that are coming through. So those are some of the details I wanted to share with you. And we have declared a dividend of 12.5% this year. And you know, and we also raised the capital of about 300 crores Tier 2 in the fourth quarter, which is also reflected in our capital adequacy. Our capital adequacy continues to be strong. And we believe that given the efficiency of usage of capital, we should be able to grow our book, you know, and without having to raise capital for at least another year, maybe 15 months. That's our current thinking. So with those observations and with those commentary, I would like to hand over for questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may please press star and 1 at this time. The first question is from the line of Darpin Shah from Haitong, India. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, thanks, and you know, congratulations on good set of numbers. So a couple of questions. First is on margins. So so you have mentioned that, you know, in the PPT that, you know, you are targeting margins of 365 to 375 basis point. We are already at roughly around 4.2 types of, or 420 basis point kind of margins. So do we see that kind of a sharp drop in 24, or this is just the long-term target which you're looking at?
See, our business model and the product mix and the kind of slippages and upgrades that we expect and the kind of deposit profile that we are working on, we have built a business model which can deliver higher than 1% ROA and closer to 14, maybe higher than 14% ROE. With 365-375 basis points of NIM. Okay. Now the methodology. See, always there are so many moving parts in this NIM. The methodology of passing on the increase of interest rate in EBLR is that as soon as Reserve Bank of India changes the repo rate, we pass on that to the customer. However, the deposit cost would be actually coming through. So I do believe that the deposit cost that is like is coming through. In fact, fourth quarter deposit cost was high, especially for retail term deposit. I believe that it will have an impact on margin. And even for this current year, at least from a business model point of view, we are not assuming margins of 4.18. Okay. Also, we have had some benefit. There has been a interest that we did we consider in the margin, the 3 crore of tax? No, so we didn't consider that. Right? Then it doesn't really matter. So I think the upgrades and recoveries were very strong, and that also results in some amount of reversal of that is the recognition of the income which was not previously recognized. So that also impacts the margin in a positive way. Hello?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, sorry. So please, so yeah. So in terms of, sorry?
That's my response, I said. Yeah.
Yeah. I was saying that this, you know, how much then deposit reprice has already happened for our book, and how much more it can happen and lead to increase in cost of deposits then?
See, the cost of deposits, last we changed the cost of deposit must have been at least, what, a month ago, somewhere in March or April, March, yeah, March we changed, I think, the deposit. Since then, I don't think we have changed the deposit rates. It is published in our website. And I don't believe that deposit rates are coming up, but what I'm trying to say is that all the new deposits will come in the higher rate that has been, when I say all the deposits, most of the retail deposits, and we are taking longer term deposits because of our mortgage book. We target 20-24 months kind of bucket for our deposits. So that will have an impact on the cost of funds, and we won't be able to pass on further. Only in MCLR we can pass on, but not in EBLR portfolio. So that will impact NIM.
Okay, fair enough. And sir, lastly, on the asset quality front, you know, we have seen a sharp improvement in slippages during the quarter. What trend you see for FY 2024 as well?
We should be in similar trend, but you know, there may be some month up, down and all. But if I remember right, I had mentioned in the first quarter of last year itself, that in about two to three quarters, the slippages should go back to pre-COVID levels. And I think without gold, our slippages are about 2%, which is what, 2-2.5% was the slippages there. If the way we have analyzed our portfolio, if slippages do go up in any particular quarter, we are pretty confident that our collections and our recoveries effort would bring it down. So we don't see any issue with our portfolio. Only if you see an issue with the portfolio, then consistently your you know credit slippages and all will increase. There may be some up and down in one or two months here and there, but other than that, we don't see any challenge at the moment.
Okay. Just one last question, a data keeping question. If I can get the breakup of provisions for the quarter and full year. Thank you.
Satish, you have that? Yeah,
Satish will- I have the data for the quarter. I think for the earlier calls, we had given the data for the respective quarters. So NPA provision is about 39 crores. Floating provision is about 4 crores, and the provision relating to standard asset, restructured standard assets and other things, they are the rest of it. The total provision for the quarter was 62 crores.
Okay, thanks a lot.
See, Darpin, I want to tell you something. I looked at IBA publishes all the private bank and SFB results. Of course, they are one year late. They have published that for 2021-22, and I looked at the floating provisions. We are the only bank, I repeat, we are the only bank for the last several years, consistently have been making floating provision quarter on quarter, and our floating provision currently is about 137 crores, which is considered in the calculation of provision coverage. And touch wood, we have never had to use the floating provision. Some of the banks have used the floating provision, so that's a very important strength which is there in our bank.
Yeah, great, sir.
Thank you.
Okay.
A reminder to our participants, please press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Jai from ISEC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening, sir, and congratulations on a good quarter.
Thank you.
First, on asset quality, so the slippages, we have had high slippages on gross front because of some daily recognition and some of the, you know, gold-related product, OD-related product. Has that now normalized with this quarter slippages coming down significantly? So can we say that the, you know, the entire whatever technical reasons, that has now ended?
See, if a customer does not pay their interest or principal and or principal for like three installments or 90 days, there's nothing technical about it. That is an NPA. Okay. The November 12 circular, what we were impacted, the gold loans were impacted by that, is because we are giving an OD product. Many of those OD product customers have, after what is that called, closing their current loan, have switched to installment loan. Okay, so in installment loan, that 90-day problem on November 12 circular does not happen, because even if they service one interest, they will still be all right as long as they don't slip to 90 days past due. Right. So to that extent, I think a lot of that issue has been addressed. But I do believe that in while addressing that issue, we may have lost some target market who are only wanting to have OD kind of product. But we did a cost analysis, the cost of chasing them and collecting versus doing losing the business. We took a call saying, let's just do this, because it impacts productivity of branch staff if they have to chase up these customers. Regarding mortgages and commercial vehicle and rest of the other kind of retail product like KCC, tractors and all, we very much believe that those portfolios seem to be intact. Barring any unforeseen situation, the slippages should be pretty much close to, if not better, to pre-COVID levels.
Right. And sir, in this quarter, how much were the slippages from the restructured book? There is a...
We don't present those information. The entire, whether it is from slippages from restructured book or non-restructured book, everything is the slippages. And that is how it has been every quarter. And the recoveries and upgrades are also from both restructured and normal things. So, you know, we are not presenting that information. Don't worry about the restructured book. If for 1 year it has performed... So you shouldn't worry about that anyway. We don't, so you shouldn't also.
Sure. And the almost entirely has come out of moratorium, right? I mean, they would be starting...
Only a very small fraction is left, which will come out by, I think, July. It's almost a very, very small portion is left. Everything else is out of the moratorium. And when they come out of the moratorium, we have to struggle with the customer for about 2 to 3 months. And because their muscles of repaying has atrophied, so they, you know, despite our pushing and you know, whatever, doesn't work. So finally, when the collections team is constantly following up with them, they start repaying, and then it gets almost normalized in about 2-3 months. So that part will be there even for the ones that come out in July. But overall portfolio includes slippages from restructured, and recoveries and upgrade also includes slippages from restructured.
Sure. And sir, if you have the number for ECLGS, right? How much is the ECLGS?
It's a bahut purana story ho gaya. You know, ECLGS slippages also in this, ECLGS recoveries from government also in this thing. Everything is all inside this. And we didn't give ECLGS to any unsecured customer at all, this thing. Ab ECLGS story vagera khatam ho gaya. You know, even I don't look at it, by the way.
And on the cost of deposit, sir, would it be fair to assume that your card rate on TD would have peaked, or you think you may still have to increase the card rate of TD? So while cost of deposit may keep going up because of the, as deposits reprice, but the fresh TD, in your view, the card rates would have peaked or...
Praveen, our retail head, can answer it.
Hi Jay, Praveen here. So currently the peak rate we have on term deposit has remained there, all through Q4, and there is no reason to believe why we should increase the rate for getting the kind of term deposit, the kind of deposits that we got, right? I mean, Q4 is by convention the particular quarter where the most highest amount of renewals and highest amount of acquisition happens. We've been through it, and I don't see, at least personally, don't see that increasing any further for the kind of loan demand that we have going forward.
Sure.
But in between buckets, based on our ALM profile and things like that, we do keep doing that. For example, let's say we decide that we want to attract more deposit in say 1 year bucket or more deposit in 3 year bucket, that ALCO will keep doing some changes depending upon the profile, right? So overall peak doesn't seem like an issue at the moment, at least.
Sure, sir. And last two questions, sir. First is, in the last 1-2 years, we have added a lot of capacity in terms of branches and headcount, right? And so if you can share if there is any, you know, qualitative improvement in the loan sourcing also. So, I mean, if one were to club connectors as, let's say, outside bank channel, so is there any meaningful change in the way we would be sourcing business just because we have added a lot of branches and employee in the last 1-2 years?
In the metros, like I mentioned in many of my calls, previous calls, almost 70-odd% of the business comes from connectors. Okay? But in AIB and non-metro business, almost 70-80% will come from our own sourcing, and that mix is how it is proceeding. But to give you some more sense, if we look at the total disbursals without co-lending in Q4 of 2021-22 versus Q4 of the year that has just gone by, there is a 50% improvement in the disbursal, whereas our average headcount has gone up only by 27-28%. That's quality in terms of what we have put in. And I'm quite sure the more work that we do in terms of improving productivity, improving product, the process, systems, and that's a continuous process, we believe that we can improve it further. We put up a software called Cube, which is for processing current and savings account and a few other deposit products. We have been able to reduce 98% of the errors that was being committed by frontline. We invested, say, one in that software. We have been able to save four because of that software of various reasons, various categories like printing, stationery, productivity, you know, rework, blah, blah, all that put together. Also, the number of applications that being processed by Cube, which started, let's say, at about 100, has gone to, let's say, about 10,000. That's the kind of volume that is being processed. So frontline improvements that I keep talking about has power to improve the productivity, and we are working on it.
Sure. And last question, sir, maybe it is too early, but if you can share the, you know, your thoughts on the succession planning. You know, when do the bank starts to do that? Would the bank have a parallel run? And you know, when does this entire process start?
What is the parallel run?
I mean, the new guy, whoever it is, either external, internal, who does a parallel run with you, understanding bank culture. If it is more important, if the person is outsider, but just to the handholding kind of a thing, the parallel run.
Okay, so the nomination committee will decide the agency, the headhunting agency that would be appointed, and the search panel. I believe all that should get completed soon. We believe that we need to put in the application for the new CEO top by end of November, because RBI needs about 4-5 months to process this this thing. So I believe that we are well on track. Both internal and external candidates will be evaluated, and then NRC and board will take a decision.
Sure, that is very helpful, sir. Thank you, and all the best, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Akshay Gupta from Investec Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi sir, thank you for the opportunity. So just two questions from my side. So currently there is 33% growth in year-on-year growth in OPEX. So what is the OPEX growth for the next year we are expecting?
It will be much less than 33%. because we have already built the capacity. So for example, we have added average headcount of 27% year on year. I don't expect the increase to be, I mean, it won't be more than maybe 12-14%. That's what the current trends are indicating. So that would result in whatever, because headcount is our biggest cost. And number of branches would continue to be about 25-30. That is unlikely to change.
Okay. And sir, second question on like, what's your PSL income for FY23 versus FY22?
1 minute.
Yeah.
We don't disclose the PSLC income. No, we are not disclosing that income. But yeah, okay. Yeah.
Okay, and sir, last question, sir, I missed.
So last year, the overall PSLC income was close to 80 crores. And this year, the entire year's full year PSLC income is about 20 crores. So there has been a big fall. And as MD mentioned in his initial comments, that despite severe fall in the PSLC income, as well as we not been having the opportunity to have any treasury gain, the overall fall in the non-interest income has been really contained through a robust disbursements and a very good growth in our processing fee income, as well as a very good trajectory that we have seen in insurance and investments income.
Okay, and sir, I, last question on gross slippages. Like I missed your commentary on the gross slippages. So just I want to know, like when we will, like when will they go below to the pre-COVID level or something?
No, when we were at pre-COVID, we were doing very well on slippages, and going back to pre-COVID, we are pretty much there at pre-COVID level. If you just exclude the gold, and gold, I told you is not a problem at all. Gold will slip and gold will get upgraded. That's not a problem at all. So I would say that our slippages are about 2% without gold. Pre-COVID, it used to be about 2.25, 2.4 like that. So I think we are there already.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of MB Mahesh from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi. Muli, just a couple of questions. One, in terms of the demand side for loans, how is the situation today?
Well, we haven't got any resistance from our sales side, and we have not changed our credit policy. Okay, we have not loosened our credit policy to accommodate more target or more customers or anything like that. That all has remained as it was. If any, we probably may have kind of refined it further based on the learning and so on and so forth. So we are not getting any resistance from our frontline. We still hold that we should be able to grow the core products. Don't include corporate in it, because corporate is a very opportunistic kind of business that we run. So without that, we are still pretty confident that we should be able to double the loan book in about three and a half years. Like.
Okay. Second question, on your outstanding stock of NPAs on the mortgage book, how is has the situation improved in terms of resolution timelines?
I don't know. Praveen can comment. I'm not sure because, go ahead.
Hey, hi, Mahesh. Praveen, yeah?
Yes. Hi, sir.
So, Mahesh, so what you're seeing is that the 2020, early 2020, the first half 2020 NPAs have gotten to a 24-month kind of cycle. So by now, judicial proceedings are really giving us results in terms of verdicts from the court, and that is helping us kind of tempt the customer to make the adjustments, right, and sell the assets on his own and then give us back the money. So we are seeing incrementally what we can collect, that we are collecting, that's an early vintage NPS have been giving us a result, and that's how the momentum had happened in the first, the initial months. Now we are seeing that the older vintage, where ability to pay was a problem, where asset sale had to happen, you are getting the resolutions of DRP and SARFAESI coming in as an influencer to help the to help us convince the customer to sell the property and then move on. So both are, so the early vintage clearly is behaving pre, like pre-COVID. and the later vintage NPAs, you're getting the benefit of the court orders to help recover.
Perfect. So just
one important thing is at the some of the target market that we have, which is like a small ticket home loan, like a 15-20 lakh kind of customer, or even those ticket size lakh customers, we don't have to do repo and all. Just a legal notice and all can actually result in recovery proceedings, taking shape. So we don't really have to go to the court, repossess and all these things. So those customers are, we don't have to push them to that extent.
Yeah. Murali, we've hit about 50 basis points credit cost for FY23. In terms of what the outlook that you're looking for the next, let's say, 1 or 2 years, does this number go below this, or you think this is the bottom that we can reach?
The collections team and the analytics team believe that it can go below that. But there are so many things that happen in our country that doesn't give me the confidence. There could be any event that can actually cause issues. So I believe our business model is back to the same what it was before COVID, which is that 40, 45 basis point, top 50 basis point type of credit cost. The intention is to do better, because I think during the COVID, one benefit that we have got is you got better at some of the collection process mechanism, and we are also introducing some technology there to improve productivity. Those should come in, hopefully in the next few months. We definitely got better in collections during COVID. Capacity-wise, planning-wise, all that has happened quite well, I must say.
Perfect. Thanks, Pradeep. Thanks, Murali.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Rakesh Kumar from BNK Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Thal. Thanks a lot, sir. So firstly, just one question to understand that, how much spread that we are making on, cost of deposit in EBLR regime and in MCLR regime. So if you can share that, what is the spread in each of the regime that we make?
No, all that is a composite number that has been reflected in our financials. And it's very hard to calculate all that, because there is a part of MCLR book, there is part which is an EBLR book, there is a book which is semi-fixed, which over a period of 1 year and all will come into either EBLR or MCLR, depending upon what was the contract at the time of booking that customer. The deposit profile itself keeps changing. So I don't believe that I can even attempt to answer that question. But all we are saying is that our business model is somewhere around 370, 375 basis points, and we believe that with a mix of products on both deposit and the loan side, we should be able to achieve that.
Okay. Now, secondly, sir, on the gold loan book side, which is close to 8% of our loan portfolio, so did we have a double-digit, gross delinquency rate in this quarter?
Means what?
In the gold loan book, the gross delinquency rate was, annualized number was in double digit this quarter.
What worries you in gold? If you can explain to me, then,
No, so first thing is that, at the first place, why should we have, this kind of a gross delinquency rate? So recovery happens, as you were telling, that recovery happens in this book. But at the first instance, what is the reason for such a high delinquency in the book?
Gold loan book will be high delinquency, and I won't apologize for that. The reason is, these are small customers, 1 lakh, 2 lakh, 3 lakh, 5 lakh, small customers who use gold loan for their business purposes and for emergency purposes, and sometimes even for putting money for their property margin money or whatever, all these things. These are small customers. They don't have great discipline. Many of them are serviced by NBFCs, where they actually would have taken a bullet loan, and they don't have to service on a monthly basis. Whereas when they take it with a bank, we have to kind of bring in the credit discipline of making them pay. As long as we have taken good quality loan and our LTV is intact, we don't worry about the gold loan portfolio. okay? And we have very good safeguards to ensure that we are not taking either some syndicated fraud gold or some spurious gold in our branches. And wherever we find any issues in terms of process and all, we try to address it very quickly so that it doesn't become a problem for us. So gold loan delinquency goes up, I don't think any of us worry about it.
Understood, sir. Understood. So what is the LGD that you were mentioning, sir, in this book? In this
LGD?
Segment?
In gold?
LGD for this book?
LGD.
I think Praveen can ask. I think loss given was zero almost.
Yes, zero.
Rakesh, see, the non-given is virtually nothing. There is actually gold loan business, right? I mean, look at it this way. 133 crore was NPA stock when we started the year. That has come down to 19. So during the year, gold NPA stock has come down from 133 to 19.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thanks a lot, sir.
Thank you. Next question is on the line of Rishikesh Oza from Robo Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. Sir, my follow-up is with regard to the OPEX. You just indicated that the next year OPEX growth would not be more than 14-15%. But if you could also share...
No, that is not what I said. I said that it will be much lower than 33 or whatever 32% that we have this year. And I also said that we have added 27% average headcount year on year. I don't believe that it will be more than 10 to 14% or something like that. So, I didn't say that it will be operating expenses will increase only by 14%. So, please correct that.
Okay. Basically, my question was regarding the cost structure. So, basically, at what OPEX level will our cost structure flatten and by when?
Cost structure will not flatten. We are running a retail and SME business, and it's a very people-oriented business. The business is about continuously adding people to grab more and more business geographically, our target or whatever, I mean, different target market and so on, and invest in frontline technology, process, systems and all to make them productive, have good credit controls and collection mechanisms so that your NPAs are good. That is our basic model. This is not a corporate bank model. This is an absolute retail model. Our average ticket size is about 30 lakhs. Okay. For example, you take any of the small finance bank, their business per employee will be some 2-3 crores and they probably will have about 25,000, 30,000 people for similar or slightly bigger balance sheet than us. Right? You can verify what I'm saying. Yes, sir. So we will continue to add people, but we lost out momentum in COVID years. So we took the courage to invest in a huge amount of frontline, like 2-3,000 people we invested, and that is showing in our disbursal volume quarter 4 2021-22 versus quarter 4 2022-23. Here on, we may not have to have such a step change in increasing our headcount. I hope that provides you with some clarity.
Sure, sir. Just one last point on this. In your PPT, you have said that your target cost to income, you want to maintain around 55%.
Yes.
Can you attach a timeline to it?
We believe that we should be able to do it within 1 to 1.5 years. And we are working towards that. We had said that we are targeting 1% ROA and 14% ROA. This quarter, we have been pretty close to it. Of course, quarter one cost would come out first, and then business grows very slowly in quarter one. If you see our last year fourth quarter ROA and ROE, we are better than that, right? And last year we may have had some one-off income, but this year even that is not there. Okay, so we are moving in the right direction. Exact timeline and all is not so easy to give because there are many variables. But directionally, it looks like in about year, year and a half, we should be consistently delivering it, if not earlier.
Okay, that was helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Drashti from Thinkwise Wealth Managers. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity, sir, and congratulations for a very good set of numbers. My question is with regards to our cost to income ratio and more to do with the productivity of our branches. So you've mentioned in a lot of calls that it takes 2 years for a branch to break even, after which we start seeing income coming in. But when I map out total income per branch over last few years, we've not seen a significant improvement in our total income per branch metrics, despite now our branches, most of our branches are already 3 years old. So if you could, 3 to 4 years old, if you could just help me understand this and how can we see this going forward?
Yeah, so if you see that last year, I'm talking about 21-22, I think we added about 52 branches or something we added there. And this year we have added 27 branches, right? A lot of the branches last year came towards the later part of the year, right? So we review branches to say how they are performing. There are branches which are already broken even in about 8 to 9 months time. I mean, I just visited a branch in Gujarat. It's just remarkable that we have been able to build a very strong book in a matter of just 8 months. But there are branches, one or two of them I can say, remember in South, that is in Tamil Nadu, where even after about 2.5 years, they have still not crossed the line. Okay, so there are variations within these. We have a very strong focus. We can actually pinpoint the revenue per branch and the cost per branch and track it. Productivity per person, we are able to track it, and we are pretty confident that on an average, when you put a bunch of branches, we can break even in about 22 to 24 months. You know, of course, there will be some outliers on both sides, but generally that is the direction in which we are proceeding. On cost income ratio, please look at any bank which has got a retail portfolio. If you have corporate book, definitely cost income ratio can be much below 50%, right? But if you just look at only the retail kind of book, and probably some of the small finance bank can give you a clue on what is pure retail. Our retail book is about 85% of our book. There, to manage cost income ratio below 60 is a very tough ask, but still we are targeting a 55% cost income ratio over a period of time. And we are confident that
point taken, sir. But if we leave aside the last 2 years where you've again started increasing your branch count, if we leave aside these 2 years, even before that, since 3-4 years, we've seen this total income per branch very stagnant level. So this is what that concerns me.
Branch and all, because we have to put, when we add 100 branches, we have to put 25% of those branches in unbanked locations, where the population will be 2,000, 3,000. Okay, so that is not a metric that we can look at, but I can tell you that we are looking at our business per employee, which is about 8 something. Like, what is the number of this? 7.8, so it is close to 8, and we will be able to improve that. The second point that I want to tell you is that we have added substantial number of headcount last year. And many of that headcount hasn't yet completely, given the peak productivity for us. So all that also has to kick in.
All right. And then my second question is regarding competition. So there are a few NBFCs which have got very active in tier 2, tier 3 cities, and specifically in the MSME segment. So do you face too much competitive pressure from these, and how do you look about it?
I mean, one of the advantages that NBFC has is that they can open branches and they don't have to worry about unbanked and, you know, all the other constraints that banks have, like us. Okay, because if I open a branch in a small location, then some percentage of those branches have to be opened in unbanked locations. So they don't have that thing. Other than that, from a cost of fund point of view, we have a much better advantage. I don't believe that some small NBFCs have cost of fund like what we have. Because we lend to many of those NBFCs, so we know exactly what their cost of fund is. Those kind of competition hasn't
given us any dampener from expanding our business or achieving the kind of disbursal goals that we have been pursuing for the last 4 quarters.
All right, sir. That's helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening, and thanks for the opportunity. Sir, I sorry to belabor this point on cost income again, but is there any non-recurring expense that we are incurring currently in other expense? And because what will drive this cost income reduction, as we are also looking at some compression
on margins? No, you guys have a framework saying that cost income ratio should be 50% or 45% and then trying to fit all banks into that. It doesn't work for us, that I want to tell you right away. Because if you compare our business of 85% retail with 50% retail of another bank, obviously, and we do those comparisons in our boardroom and see what the impact on that is. What I'm saying is we have invested in frontline heavily last year, and that is because for 2 years our average CAGR growth on 21 and 22 was only 7 or 8%. Now, we lost the balance sheet of about at least 5,000 crores because of those 2 years of COVID, because we pursue SME business. Now, the option in front of us is, okay, should we just go back to trying to grow the cost by only 10-12% and invest, or put in the investment because we know the business model, we knew how to make it work and grow the business, which is the option we have taken, and it is already demonstrating results. So this year our cost increase is unlikely to be in the 32% range. It will be much lower than 32% range, and we hope that income growth is higher than our cost growth, and that is how our cost income ratio will keep coming towards 55%.
Right, sir. Actually, I was just asking because we are building in some compression in margins also, which may limit the improvement by FY25.
Boss, we have been running this model and we did it very successfully pre-COVID. You guys were worried about the operating cost increase. We have demonstrated that in our growth. Look at our mortgage growth, it is 27%. Look at our AIB growth, it is 30%. Look at the co-lending growth, it is I think about 50-odd percent. So everywhere we are growing very, very strongly with the investment. It takes time and we are pretty confident, and they are flexible cost. In the sense, they are not sticky cost. If a set of salespeople or frontline don't perform, there is a clear scorecard which helps us address those costs.
Right. Thank you, sir. Thank you, and wish you all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Krishnan ASV from HDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi. Many thanks for taking my question.
Please go ahead.
Are you able to hear me, Mumbai?
Yes, sure.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, thanks. So my question is a little more on, you know, just the MSME business and where they are at, given the kind of rate cycle or the steep acceleration in rates that we have seen over the past year. Could you, I mean, and given that you tend to be, kind of the banking predominantly with the MSMEs in India, could you just throw some light on where we are at? We tend to think that, you know, housing and autos are typically rate sensitive. That hasn't proven to be the case. Are MSMEs, you know, reflecting any sense of rate sensitivity at all?
Praveen, you want to answer that? Yeah. Praveen will.
Hi, Krishnan. Praveen here. So, I'll just tell you with the particular segment that we are looking at, and that is the micro part of the MSME. Our average ticket size hovers around the 30 lakh mark. Okay, the products that we do either cater to the capital requirement of the customer or specific business loans for those installment loans for those particular customers. That's what we're looking at. Where this particular book is concerned, we are seeing that there is an increasing demand coming in, and the delinquencies and early delinquencies for this customers of a similar vintage is actually better than the pre-COVID levels. So good demand, reasonably good performance thus far. It's a pretty large market. Okay, it's a pretty large market. A lot of our this particular segment is an assessment based on an ability where these people are still not having recorded verified income. Quite a lot of these customers are new to credit as well, and it's a growing market. In India, the MSME segment that we're speaking about is a 63 million base. And over a period of time, they will get formalized. And when they get formalized, our ability to assess income will be better, and we'll be able to give a higher loan. Today, you're very conservative. You give a higher loan. So there are built-in moats for these customers. There's an ability that the bank has. We've gone through a couple of credit cycles of average of, let's say, five years, 6 years, right? Two 6-year cycles you've passed through. You've gone through headwinds of pandemic and demonetization, what have you, GST, right? Multiple headwinds. And now you're seeing the results of that in terms of the NPA stock post-pandemic decreasing the way it has been decreasing in an absolute sense, forget in a percentage sense. So it's a very thriving market where there's an expertise the bank has.
Right. So which is what we are, which is what I think I'm trying to just make sense of, reconcile the macro headwind with the micro tailwind. Because at an enterprise level, it seems that companies have almost infinite capacity to absorb rate hikes. It's also reflecting in fairly superior recoveries and upgrades, organic upgrades that you yourself are seeing, and the rest of the banking system as well. So what gives here is all I'm trying, is all that I'm trying to...
The parallel you can draw is this. So these are customers primarily in the service industry, right? So take an example of something like a marriage hall. The business has been virtually nil from March 2020 to a good part of 2021. They have definitely become NPA because there is no revenue coming in. But what you see happening currently, and that's the proof of the pudding, is in the stock numbers. Not only are many of them, most of them, servicing their EMIs, but also have had a benefit of increased business, which is allowing them to pay back their entire overdues. Otherwise, they will continue to be in NPA. So if you were to take mortgages, 342 crore of NPA stock is now 270 crores. That movement you see is because there is a resilience and robustness of the business. Some people have gone completely out of the business, started new businesses which are income generating, and that income generating resilience is what is key to this MSME segment, which is allowing them to come back into the regular installment paying capability plus knocking off the overdues in most cases. Another point which I want to tell you, Krishan, is that if you see our recoveries, it's got two components in it. There's an upgrade component and there's a recovery component in it. Recovery is when the customer throws up his hands and says, look, there is no way. I can't repay this particular loan. My business is not working. Upgrade is where the customer finds an alternative revenue stream or an increased revenue stream where he clears overdues and becomes a normal customer. One of the reasons why you're seeing the improvement in NIM is because these customers, the NPA customer continues to be a revenue generating, revenue accruing customer and is giving us a flow. So you're getting the overdue flow, minimum of 3 months, maximum could be as high as about 12 months. So there is a very big resilience in this particular segment. So we talked about the demand, we talked about the size of the particular market across geographies, and we talked about the ability of the customer to find, to come back to normal. So I'm not 100% sure of the micro tailwind that you're speaking. We don't see that. We see the clear resilience in the kind of customer selections that we had of this particular segment to not only to service installments, but to service installments and clear overdues so far.
Right. That's very helpful. So just one other question, which is more about, you know, the target segment that you have been going after very consistently, Murali, for the last 15 years. And I'm asking this to you, Murali, because you have kind of re-engineered the bank from the time that it was in trouble. And you've seen all the difficult years, and now it seems, you know, the kind of easier years ahead. And so all credit to you and the rest of the team that has been through with DCB all these years. But I just wanted to understand, has that addressable market that DCB wants to go after, how much has IndiaStack helped you to kind of expand your own target universe? And could you just kind of index it for us just to understand the addressable market just for DCB Bank? Looking at it inside out,
I think a lot of the items have helped us. Aadhaar has helped us, no question about that, because it makes life so easy in terms of doing KYC and all the items that are linked with Aadhaar. GST has helped us immensely. You know, many of the customers at least are partly in the GST bracket. Our own ability to kind of all the digitization that has happened, whether in electricity bill or supplier bill and all those things, all that has given us the confidence of looking at things a lot more carefully and be confident of what we are doing. So I would say that and then we also have learned a lot about the target market. Hitherto, some of the target market which we didn't understand, by doing a little bit small experiments and all, we have been able to go into those target markets as well. I mean, when we started this journey, I don't think our ticket size was 20-30 lakhs. We probably would have been 50-60 lakhs. But over time, we have been able to kind of successfully enter these target market and create at an individual level very profitable kind of loans.
And Murali, if I can add,
yeah, sure.
Geolocation, digital collection, the ecosystem in the country has significantly changed and really helping us big time. We know where the customers are. We know the customers have an ease of payment. You don't have to come 40 kilometers away to the nearest branch to pay back the money. There's a sea change.
Right. That's very helpful. I'm done with my questions. Thank you. Thank you. And all the best. Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Sohail Halai from Antique Stock Broking. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir, and congratulations on a good set of numbers.
Thank you.
So my question actually relates to from the provision coverage ratio. So we have reached on-books PCR of around 68 and closer to 80%, including technical write-off. So from a book perspective, which has around 25% in terms of the mortgage NPA, is it relatively fair to assume that all the legacy NPL provision in other books have been basically taken care of? And probably in terms of this was a question asked in the past as well, that can you actually undershoot the credit cost probably because of the increase in the provision that you have made so far?
So I don't know what you mean by legacy. We are the legacy right now. Okay. Whatever we have created, we own it. Okay. That's what it is. Right. So I don't know how to respond to you on that legacy part of it. All I want to say is that, all I want to say is that 85% odd of our book is secured. Right. 50 odd percent of our book is mortgages. Even the entire SME book is, most of the SME book is secured except for Threads. Threads is not secured. If I look at Tractor, KCC, all that has a security. And each of that, we understand the loss given default and probability of default. All these also have improved post-COVID, also because of our collection efficiency as well as various other kind of analytics that we put in to improve our performance on that. So I believe our collection coverage ratio is pretty strong. We don't have any target coverage ratio. We wanted to be above 70% and we are above 70%. We keep making provision as per RBI norms or more. Like in mortgage and all, our provision norms are higher than what is expected by RBI. So we will continue to build on that provision while trying to do the best that we can in terms of recoveries and upgrades on these slippages. So I do think that our credit cost should be in the range of 45-50 basis points, which was our pre-COVID level number.
Okay, thanks. Sir, another question pertaining to this only. In terms of write-offs, is something that we are doing it for the last three quarters around 40-60 crore range. And is it fair to assume that some of these write-offs have also started flowing through the P&L?
Flowing through.
In terms of from the income level, so recoveries from written-offs has actually improved over the last two, three quarters?
I'm not sure, Satish, are you able to relate to this question?
I'm not able to relate to the question exactly. What exactly?
So, probably in terms of one, that you are actually writing off around 40-50 crores per quarter now. And historically also in terms of last two, 3 years, you have written off some amount of these loans. If I just back calculate in terms of write-off and the cumulative write-off books that we have, so is recoveries from written off account also started picking up in the last two, three quarters?
So you're saying the recovery from the written off accounts?
That will actually come into provision.
Yeah, that
happens to income.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah, the yeah, correct, na?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So the recoveries that are coming from written off account also come as a come in the provision line, not in the income line.
Okay. Okay. But yeah. Sir, is the trend improving there as well?
Yeah, I mean, when we look, see, the collection team does not have any idea what we have written off at the head office. They don't have any idea about it.
Okay.
They are collecting on the account as though it's an NPA. I mean, like, collection team will have no clue which item we have, which account we have written off and which account we have not written off. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
And so final question in terms of from the yield on loans, I understand that some amount would be because of the upgrades and recovery as well. But post three or four quarters, our yield on loans actually moved up. So is the pricing environment better as compared to what we have seen in the last year? Any qualitative comments on this?
No, the competition is as tough as it be. We keep doing analytics and making sure that we are pricing as much as possible from a credit risk point of view, so that we don't lose the margin and the margin for both making money as well as to absorb the credit losses. The mix of portfolios that we have on the deposit and the loan side, we are targeting a NIM of about 370-375 basis points. If you do very well on collections, recoveries and all, you may see some improvement in our NIM, which is what you have seen here in this particular quarter. Also, the EBLR, it works like this, that you actually make the change in EBLR as the RBI announces its repo rate changes, and the deposit cost follows. So we do expect some compression in our NIM in the coming quarters.
Okay. And so this basically in terms of, if you could just quantify how much of the yield benefit would be because of upgrades and recovery, any ballpark number?
We don't have that information for us. Everything is comprised in the... in the NIM, yeah. So we don't have that information.
Sure, sir, no problem. Thanks, sir, and all the best.
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pallavi Deshpande from Sameeksha Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to understand what would be our term deposit cost right now currently, and what would be the share of the deposits, you know, which get a special rate above the card rate in the deposit mix.
Why would we give a special rate over the card rate? But bulk rate is also published for us, no? Yeah. So whatever, see, some of the banks are not publishing bulk rates. We publish all the rates. What you see in our website is all the rates that you see. And I think our bulk rates have been brought down probably in April or something, I don't know, something like that. Some date, I don't remember. We brought it down. So there are no rates that are not published. All the rates are what you see.
Right, right, got it. And now, secondly, sir, on the co-lending side, which you're seeing very good growth. So what drives, I mean, you know, the take rates, what is the kind of take rates you have to offer to the fintech partners for these?
What rate?
The take rate to, for the fintech partner, or what, you know.
What is the rate split between us, you are saying?
Yeah, I understand that's 80-20, is that right?
The 80% of the loan is with us and 20% of the loan, you want to explain that whole thing? Yeah, Praveen will explain. Hold on.
So, Pallavi, what we do is we have co-lending partnerships where there is minimum skin in the game of 20% for the originator. And depending upon what kind of product it is, it can go higher. So,
right.
The reward and the risk are shared equally. So, with 20%, everything is shared. The book, 80% of the book comes to us at our agreed pricing, and the customer pays whatever the origination pricing is to the originator, right?
And in case your partner cannot have the book, like, you know, somebody like a Paytm or somebody, they can keep the book on their this thing. So you wouldn't have those kind of partnerships, I'm assuming.
I'm not too sure whether I got the question. Can you say that again?
Some players in the market, the fintech players, they can't keep that on their books. And so, this 80-20 may not work with those players. So would that prevent you from those, being with those players? Talking of the likes of Paytm, yeah.
Yeah. So Pallavi, there are two things. There is one is a co-lending. What I will explain to you was the concept of co-lending.
Right.
We have a significant, a sizable book on co-lending. What you're talking about is a referral arrangement with fintechs. Most of the fintech referrals are coming under the buy now, pay later or personal loans, mostly in the unsecured segment, right? That's how the industry currently, or checkout financing, etc. That's an area which we are not, we're not invested in. Where there are fintechs which are providing you with mortgage or SME leads, we take that, but that follows us similar to the connector model. So it's more a lead referral thing than there is no identification, etc., of the customer, Aadhaar identification of the customer at the fintech end. We take it full on and then do the appraisal entirely ourselves, reject or accept as per our criteria and move on.
Right. Got it, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Akshay Gupta from Investec Capital. Please go ahead. Akshay Gupta, your line is unmuted.
Hello.
Yes, please go ahead.
So can you hear me?
We can hear
you. I can hear you.
Hello.
We can hear you. Please go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. My question is you received lower PSL income compared to the last year. So why the PSL rate fallen, and do we expect it to recover?
PSL.
So, Akshay, hello?
Yeah.
So, on PSLC, the bank's priority sector lending book as a percentage of the total advances that we have remained as healthy as it is. So, there is no supply problem. But the rate at which the PSLC is being purchased in the year 22-23 has plummeted as compared to 21-22. And the reason for this is not a demand issue, it is a supply issue. Earlier, for the customer to be eligible for priority sector lending, you had to necessarily get a UDAM certificate, which had to meet certain norms of what kind of activity the customer is doing, and it's a stringent way of ensuring that that particular customer is meeting the particular norms and getting a certificate called UDAM. That has been significantly relaxed in the last year, which has resulted in an increased supply. Now, the moment supply has increased, two things have happened. Many institutions which were deficient in PSL has by virtue of easier norms got fulfill the PSL criteria or near fulfill the criteria. Secondly, the need for purchase also has become significantly less, which has resulted in a drop in the price. What will happen in the future depends upon how much of PSL is required by whom in the market, and that will drive the price. So right now, there is no clear visibility of what the price is going to be.
Okay. And so my second question is like related to our new CFO appointment, like when we are expecting a new CFO in our system, and it will be from internal or external. Some comments on this.
So as of now, Ravi Kumar is going to be taking charge from Satish. Satish is here with us until June 3rd, and the NRC and board will work with the management team, and we will finalize the candidate in about a few weeks, which is what we have represented in the stock exchange.
Okay, that's it from my side. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, operator.
Thank you.
I hope that's is there any other question left?
No, sir. That would be our last question. Would you like to add any closing remarks?
Yeah. Thanks very much for dialing into this call. It's been a pleasure interacting with all of you, and look forward to talking to you again next quarter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of DCB Bank Limited, that concludes today's call. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.